I love the fact that I don't have to look for something anymore. You know, I know I've been in that mental space where I didn't know what I wanted to do, and it was suffocating to be in that mental space. So I love the fact that I really know what I'm working towards. I like the work that I do.
Hello, I'm Renee Vaughan Sutherland, and welcome to Greater Than 11%, a weekly podcast that explores roles and opportunities within the creative industries, with the aim of contributing to increasing diversity across the board, in addition to promoting some awesome women. For episode 72, we are joined by illustrator and graphic designer Sneha Shankar. Sneha's illustrations are familiar but evoke a sense of the ephemeral. She captures small, everyday moments with a tenderness that is relatable as much as it is a reminder. These everyday interactions we have with both family and friends are just as important as the big standout moments of celebration. Sneha recalls drawing for as long as she can remember. Her mother enrolled her at a very young age in both performing and art classes. She states, "The one constant in her life has been art." She did a professional diploma in fine arts and went on to achieve a degree in engineering, but made the decision to follow her heart, which was all about art, and did a postgrad in graphic design from the MIT Institute of Design in Pune, India. Sneha freelances, and in her capacity as a graphic designer, has created beautiful artwork for the likes of Monsoon Harvest, Third Wave Coffee, Australian kids lifestyle brand Newbury, and Aubrey Chocolates, where her work landed her a semi-finalist in the digital graphic design category for the Adobe Design Achievement Awards in 2016. A self-initiator, she has a notebook to hand every turn, by the bed, in her bag, on her workstation, capturing big and small ideas as they come to her. And she practices self-care on a daily basis through her morning ritual of journaling, something she attributes has huge benefits to her creativity and focus. And in this current moment where our world seems a little uncertain and undergoing a massive period of change, it is definitely something that we could latch onto and be a benefit for every one of us. So I'm particularly looking forward to discussing this element with her. We also have an exclusive. Sneha has also created some beautiful illustrations that you can download via our website, greater than 11%.com, to colour in either digitally or by hand, which we will discuss in more detail in the interview. Sneha, I'm so happy to be connecting with you, albeit virtually, and we've had a few hit and misses getting off the ground this morning. Welcome to Greater Than 11%.
Thank you, Rini. I'm so glad to be here. Thanks for having me.
We've got heaps to talk about. I'm wondering if we can start with you talking about these two roles that you inhabit, illustrator and graphic designer, and then, you know, what that involves and any crossover that happens.
Like a lot of creatives, I have never known how to put myself in boxes. So I still say that I am an illustrator and graphic designer because I love both of them so much. There are certain projects which come in, which involves me to do both illustration and graphic design. And they would be for brand design projects, for strategy, and for packaging design work, which I absolutely love. So if any of these projects come within my capacity and I'm able to do both of them, grab them up. Also, as an illustrator, it's pretty much conceptual work that I like doing. I work with editorials for magazines and things like that. I also like to call myself an educator because I love doing in-person workshops. And eventually, I would like to have an online class where people can take up illustration courses or something of the sort by this year or next year. That's like a dream goal for now. So let's see how that works.
Yeah, I mean, the time is now with the online courses.
Of course. I think this is what is pushing me into thinking of this. I'm like, wow, I can't really go out and do workshops, but what if I create something like this? People can take this from their homes. So yeah.
I think that would be fabulous because, like I mentioned in the intro, your style of illustration does linger on those kind of moments of the everyday that we experience within our home or with our partners or with our friends. So I could see a workshop online really working well, seeing we're all kind of housebound at the moment.
We are, but this has been inspiring me since forever, the everyday mundane. I feel like people run too fast in their daily lives and they don't really pause and reflect on the little things that give them joy. And I feel like if I can make some of that, people could like just pause and reflect on those little moments. It would mean the world to me if people try doing that in their daily lives.
Yeah, and you mentioned that this has been part of your kind of practice, this focus on everyday interactions. And I don't want to call them mundane. I know that they could be referred to it that way, but they are these kind of really tender moments that we forget exist. So what drew you to that, and how did you develop that kind of focus and look and feel?
Wow, I don't know where to start. But I feel like as a creative, I've learned how to become very self-aware. And as a person, I feel like I have grown into a practice of understanding my thoughts and figuring out what is it that I would want to work on. For this, I think my morning pages has been an absolute blessing. I don't know if your listeners know about morning pages, but it's this amazing practice where you get up every morning and you write 3 pages of longhand writing, anything that comes into your mind. It has been an absolute blessing for me, because when you dump all of the excessive unimportant things in your mind first thing in the morning, all you're left with is inspiration. So you don't have like a gazillion things going behind at the back of your head, nagging, you know, the sort of that feeling. Once you have a clean slate, it's just absolutely brilliant to work on things that actually inspire you.
So I'm a little curious here. When you say like a brain dump to get rid of kind of the circular thoughts that we have, you know, like, oh, I must do this, I must do that, or that person really annoyed me, or whatever it may be. Yeah. So practically, how does it work?
I think I read this in a book which is called Artist's Way. Mm-hmm. And it's one of the practices that the author suggests that everyone does. Essentially, you just write 3 pages of absolutely anything that comes to your mind. You do not pause, you do not wait, and you don't get distracted by anything else. You just write. It could be something like, hey, my dog is near me, I don't know what to write, I'm drinking a lot of water. It could be absolute BS. Mm-hmm. It doesn't have to matter. It has to come out of your head. Because once all of that does, you just make space for better things and to absorb more. Because I feel like every day we are bombarded with a lot of social media, with a lot of news. We consume a lot these days, essentially. And if you consume a lot, you need to be able to give it out of yourself as much. And we don't end up creating every day. But I think this could be a good way of dumping things from your brain.
Okay, so the journaling helps in the morning, like brain dump. And then how do you, like thinking about your style, so that's helped you in a way shape the look and feel and what you focus on?
I won't say that has helped me shape my style. Okay, if we start talking about style, I think I have to talk about something different altogether. Mm-hmm. Because I also feel like people put too much pressure on themselves in terms of style. With my journey, I also feel like my style is forever evolving. I don't think it's going to stop at any point. It's a lifelong journey. But the point that I decided to focus on illustration, I intentionally started to draw more. I knew I had to put in the time because I was just making anything and everything, and that was okay. I gave myself the permission to experiment and to be bad at things. And I started to draw the things that I'm drawn to. I was awed by interiors and architecture, and I love fashion and I love patterns, and I come from India. So there's a lot of color and there's a lot of pattern happening anyway. But I also was experimenting a lot. I remember that there was this one time that I was so intrigued by different tools, and I picked up a brush pen and I had absolutely no idea that this is going to dictate the way I'm going to draw in the future, because it was. And my style is absolutely defined by the way I use a brush pen. And that started like 4 years ago when I had no idea what am I doing. So I think people need to be more open to trying new things, to just give themselves the permission to be bad at something. I think people put too much pressure on themselves, and I'm one of those. I put a lot of pressure on myself to be good. And sometimes I think you need to take a backseat and know that everyone had a curve. We look at people at their best and don't know their whole journey. Mm. So I think it's always nice to take a backseat and give yourself that time, become something that you want to eventually.
I want to tap into one thing you said, which I think is key, and you mentioned it a couple of times then, is about giving yourself permission. So, or giving yourself permission, you said, to be bad. I guess it is to try, fail, try again, etc. How did you come to this very clear way of saying, I give myself permission? Because I think across the creative spectrum, whatever you use as your tool for creativity, There is a lot of hesitation, there's a lot of resistance, there's a lot of procrastination because of those things, the failure, the uncertainty. So yeah, how did you arrive at this concept of giving yourself permission?
I think that comes from a place of being self-aware. And it has taken a lot of time and a lot of like effort and therapy, to be honest, because I'm such a perfectionist. I don't think it's a great trait to have, to be honest, because you sort of put yourself up for disaster if you want like 100% from yourself all the time. Once I recognize that this is not something that is working out for me, I cannot be like the best all the time, I started to take the time to become bad at something. I mean, I would call it bad, but like a friend of mine would come and look at my notebook and say, oh my God, you call this bad? But that's what it is. I mean, perfectionists think everything's bad and only their best pieces is what the world is supposed to see. So I think that being self-aware plays a big part in this.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I've talked about it loads on the podcast. I'm a huge fan of therapy and being self-aware, and also perfectionism strangles creativity.
Oh my god, yeah, 100%.
Yeah. So you mentioned the brush tool. What other, like, I know you love watercolors. I can see it throughout your work. It's beautiful. Can you talk about all your creative tools? Because you kind of, you have some digital aspects, you have some hand-drawn aspects. So it'd be lovely to get a breadth of what you use.
I kind of do everything, but when it comes to like a final piece, I try to clean it up digitally, or nowadays I use Procreate on my iPad. I think it's a blessing to have that because like I said, I love my brush pen, and Procreate has been giving me the freedom to use different brushes directly on a screen. Which, like, if I compare it to my Wacom that I still use my Wacom Cintiq, I had to look at the screen and draw on my tablet, which wasn't very comfortable, but I got used to it. iPad gives me the better possibility of reaching at a place where I would want to. I don't know if I'm clear enough, but my tools of choice currently are still like a lot of brush pens. I'm recently trying Tombow brush pens, and I kind of like them a lot. I'm also trying color pencils. It's weird because I used to use all this as a kid, and I think I'm going back to them and I'm exploring them, and it's a lot of fun. In a regular day, I only use my brush pen on my notebook. I kind of scan it and I work on top of it. If I love the texture, I retain it. But if I don't love it, if it's too rough, then I kind of go and draw on top of it with my tool on Procreate. Wow. Yeah, I think that's about it.
And I can hear you playing with some of your pens there.
I am.
You're bringing the visual to us through audio.
I'm so tactile, I can't help it. Yeah.
All right. So I mentioned in the intro that you were going down the art path, you switched into engineering, and then you came back into kind of creativity and design. So I'm wondering if you can give us, in your own words, a kind of career progression or journey from where it began up until now.
Wow, it was such a whirlwind, honestly, because like you said in the intro, that one thing that I stuck to was art. And my mom, as a brown parent, she tried to put me in every class possible. I've tried Indian classical singing, which is like Carnatic in Hindi classical. I have tried three forms of Indian classical dancing. I think I did a bunch of things, but I only stuck to art. It was not a full-time course, but I did get a professional diploma by the time I reach eighth grade.
So what's eighth grade? How old is that in India?
I think that's 14. Yeah.
So kind of the junior level of high school.
Yeah. So I think by the time I was there, I was drawing anyway. But I never saw it as a career back then. Also because I think in a lot of Indian households, there is a sort of unsaid expectation being an engineer or a doctor or a lawyer. You know, I don't think households then or parents even then back then knew that a creative job is something that is people that can do. I mean, people didn't know that you could earn being a creative. And even I didn't. And in fact, the closest that I could come to being in the creative field was I knew that I could do architecture, but I decided against it. I don't know why. I think one of my teachers suggested me not to do architecture. And I ended up in engineering like most of my friends. I was fighting within myself because I knew it's not for me. I knew while studying, and I think when I was in my third year, engineering is a four-year course, and when I was in my third year, I came home during a summer break, which is like a two-month break, and I told my mom, this is not happening, you know, I'm not able to. I was great at studies, like, you know, I was one of those kids who's much better than average. So my mom was like, what do you want to do? And I was like, I don't know what I want to do. So she's like, so if you quit this, you got to come back home and figure it out. And I got so scared with that fact. I was like, no, I'm not coming back home. So I kind of continued and I finished my engineering, but I started giving a lot of attention to what else I could be doing after I finished my degree. So I started speaking to a lot of friends and their siblings who are already into art. I started talking to people who are already doing something that I want to do, which is how I kind of transitioned. And after my engineering, I joined an events company. Like, it paid me pennies, but it was a lot of fun. It was a niche events industry, events company who worked with artists, musicians, comedians, and we set up these flea markets, sort of monthly and bi-monthly markets. So I got to interact with a lot of artists, visual artists, potters. I got to interact with musicians, and I could see firsthand what this industry is like. Because I came from an engineering and like an academic background, this was something very new to me. Mm-hmm. And I think that 10 months to a year that I took to transition was a blessing, because I felt comfortable. I felt comfortable with my decision back then. And I decided that I'm going to study visual communication. Mm-hmm. That was my degree. And I went on to do that.
Since doing that, what's kind of been your journey?
I think illustration was a very minor part of what we studied. I think they just introduced us to Illustrator and Photoshop and said that, you know, this is how you can draw on your computer. That's about it. Yeah. But it intrigued me a lot, and I kind of started including illustration within my signage design and wayfinding and my branding. And every project that I could touch on, I think I included illustration. So when I was sort of completing my degree, I found a pattern. I'm like, hey, this is what I'm repeating over on every project that we were asked to do. So I wanted to explore more of that. And when I went on to intern and make more projects, I think I focused more on my illustration part. And I wanted to include it. I wanted that to be a part of my project no matter what. Post my degree, I took some time. Instead of jumping into the corporate world, like a lot of my friends, no offense, I mean, people pick their own battles, and I didn't do that. And I took a lot of time to figure out what I would want to do. And it was illustration. I gave it a lot of time. I found the way I want to go about stuff. And I, yeah, made it my day job.
Amazing. Yeah. And so building up kind of a portfolio, but also connections in terms of being able to illustrate and provide graphic design. What has that process been like? Because freelancing life is not always that easy.
People think that illustrators just draw for a living. I would like to say that we do much more than that. Also, not just as illustrators, I think all creatives and all freelancers take up roles of 5 or 6 different people in their day-to-day lives, mm-hmm. right? Yep. You would know.
Oh, yeah. I would say that's an underestimate of where I'm at. Yeah. The moment. I am juggling so much. It's not fun, you know.
I am pretty sure.
It oscillates. Like, you're right. I think people think, oh, illustrator, with their, like, a dreamy sigh, they just get mm-hmm. to draw a day.
Absolutely.
Actually, there's a lot of hustling that goes on.
Oh, there's so much. Also, if I sit inside one room and draw forever, I'm not going to get any job. So that is not what, and I have to do my own PR, I have to keep my own finance, bookkeeping, I have to be my own manager, I have to be my own business developer, I have to decide my own business strategy, market my work, I do my own website, I manage my shop, I have to promote the work. There's so much that goes behind, like being illustrators, we are our own brands. So I, as an illustrator, don't want to stop at just illustrating for clients. I think my aims are a little different. Like I said, I want to explore being an educator as well. So my goals are a little different than most illustrators as of now. I do want to do want more clients, but I don't want to be dependent on only client jobs.
Mm.
Because we are seeing how it's turning out for people right now, just being dependent on clients. Everyone who's only dependent on clients right now is pretty much dry, and I'm seeing that firsthand.
Yeah, and so not to avoid the fact that we're all kind of at home and that, you know, not just the creative industries or the media and comms industries or the film and TV industries or the arts industries, you know, like everyone's being impacted. It's not, yeah, not touching anyone. So how, yeah, is it impacting on you at the moment, and how are you managing that?
Honestly, I feel this is scary. And this position that everyone is in. And I feel like as a society, we're going through this existential crisis. Mm-hmm. But I also feel like I've lived this way before the lockdown. And I set my life in a way that was very wholesome. And it allowed me to do things in a way that I would want to and work in a way that I would want to. The point I keep coming back to is being aware of what you need in your life.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I did set my life in that way, and it's all right, to be honest, the way I'm working. It's just that a lot of news is just a bit too much of a news.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, as much as I can understand what I need on a day-to-day basis and give myself that, I think it works out for me.
Yeah, that is great advice. Because it is, I think, as we progress, you know, it does become a lot, yeah, managing it in different ways. Because one minute you might be worried about work coming in, the next minute you might be worried about your family and where they are. And
then the next
minute it's like, you know, creative ideas and, you know, finding the space for that. And so it's like a range of emotions and experiences that we're all going through at different points of any one day.
Very true. Very true. Like, I think if a new news comes up, our heads go in and we are like, oh my God, what's happening? We'll be able to go out tomorrow and buy groceries. It's so funny because we took all this for granted every day.
Yeah.
We did. And now we are like struggling to get some like food. I mean, there is food in the market, but like just to get out is like a lot of risk. There's a lot of different pressures which have built up, I feel, apart from what already existed.
Yeah, definitely. So thinking about your illustration process and also mm-hmm. then working on a brief for a client, how does that work? What are the processes similar? Are they different? So if you're starting out doing an illustration series for mm-hmm. yourself or for an editorial, as opposed mm-hmm. to doing some graphic design work for a client, mm-hmm. how do you respond to that brief?
I think it's partially the same because like I told you, I am this research person. I find something that I would want to go forward with. Then I make the roughs and then I would translate it onto a digital illustration. If it's a client job, I would present 3 roughs to the clients and they would decide what they want to go forward with and with their creative inputs, which is what I actually like about working with illustration clients. It's a lot of collaboration and sometimes art directors push you to create something amazingly different that you didn't know that you can create. Mm. And I really like that. In terms of branding, I think the timelines are much longer. Yeah, I mean, those projects are a little more different. And the way I present those ideas are a little more explorative, I think.
Okay. And what are your rituals for staying creative, especially in this period of minimal outside?
Okay, it's so different right now because I used to love going to museums and mm-hmm. art shows and just go out in the park and do nothing, honestly. But that was mostly like a weekend for me. Mm-hmm. I didn't do that on an everyday basis. But right now, I think I'm just using all of what I've already absorbed. I think observation is a great skill to have as a creative. The more you are able to put down your thoughts and ideas and inspiration, because we have a lot inside of us that we don't really realize. I think I'm using all of that, which is already there, without seeing the outside world. In terms of ritual, I feel like I already have a great morning ritual. I think routine is something that we need to work on as freelancers, because I was doing my day job as a brand designer before jumping in full-time as an illustrator. Having a day job, you know that you have a task for the day that you give in and you need to achieve that. But as a freelancer, you kind of have the whole time to yourself and it could kind of go downhill, if you know what I mean. I do my morning pages. I do a little bit of meditation. I do yoga in the morning. Sometimes my time does not allow me to do that, and that's absolutely okay. I do it in the evening sometimes, but I do my gratitude. I have a tiny bullet journal. I'm not like, I don't put the pressure of being very creative with my bullet journal, because I think if you Google bullet journal, there are like all sorts of creative and drawings that you would see on those journals. And I don't put that sort of pressure on myself. So it's just a very minimal bullet journal of what I need every day. So do my bullet journal entries. I figure out what I need to work on. There's one important task that I want to finish in a day, and that's all I work on. In terms of planning a week, I think I pick up 3 goals for the week. So I think if you have a set ritual which leads into your workflow, it helps bring in focus to my daily work.
I'm listening with enthusiasm, because I have a habit of breaking my rituals and just keep working. So it's not that I break my rituals to muck about, you know, I'm like, oh, and I've got this and I've got this. And I get into that rhythm of like, oh, it's another tick off the list. And actually, yeah. I feel like I really mean this. I feel like I have to parent myself and speak to myself like a child.
I totally get you. I am that person, but I realize that that's not working to my benefit. We can put in like a 20 things on a to-do list every day if we want to, but it's not possible to tick them off every day. You're going to be unfulfilled at the end of the day, feeling like you didn't do enough, because there's so many things which are unchecked on your to-do list. You'd rather pick up the things that are the most important, that's your high priority, tick them off, and if time allows, you pick up something else.
I'm loving this. You're speaking right to me. This is what I need to hear right this minute. I'm loving it. So in the spirit of staying creative and self-care, as I mentioned in the intro, you've created illustrations that people can download from our site and color in. Mm-hmm. And if they choose, they can then email back a copy to us and we'll feature a number of them on our site and via Instagram. So I'm wondering if you could talk a little bit about pulling the illustrations together that you're sharing.
One of them is something which I did real quick, but it was what was required for the day. We are going through so many emotions at the moment, and I felt like I need to balance them. And it was just me balancing different aspects of life together. And some of them are little everyday tiny joys kind of things. And I think I'd love it if people color it in their own ways and send it across. It would be so much fun to see how people reciprocate on my artwork with their own.
Yeah, it's super exciting. And what I really love about it as well is the variations that are potentially going to come back, but also the benefits of colouring in. You know, that's such a meditative, joyful process, especially with colour.
And that's one of my favourite processes when I work on illustrations, is figuring out my colour palette. It like drives me crazy. I love it. Like, I love that step, and I take a lot of time to figure out my colour palette as well.
So, yeah. Go to our site, greater than 1%.com. That's 11, the number, so greater than 11.com. And you can download and find all the information about how to send them back to us, how we'll try and feature them. So really looking forward to that.
Awesome. I can't wait to see what people come up with.
Yeah, me too. So things are not typical at the moment, but pre-lockdown, was there a regular beat to what you did? So you mentioned having rituals and having a focus throughout the day, but as like a freelancer, you know, things are unpredictable in terms of work, kind of a pipeline, but also what you'll be working on.
Yeah, apart from my routine, if there's something which randomly comes up, I'm going to give in my 100% to that and like forego off my routine. Apart from my morning pages, I don't let anything off my list. And I don't think there is a regular beat to what I do, because like I said, as a freelancer, you never know what kind of projects are going to come in. It completely depends if I'm working on a workshop or if I'm working on a brand design project, if I'm working on an editorial project. It just keeps changing time to time.
And what skills would you say you need to be an illustrator and or a graphic designer?
That's a great question. But I also feel like skills are something that you can develop over years. Skills are something that a person can decide to pick and get better at them over time. I think you just need good observational skills to start with. You know, as a creative, not just as an illustrator or graphic designer, I think there should be a unique way of you telling the world your story. So I think it is more about finding your voice rather than finding a style also, like going circling back to our style question. I think if we are self-aware, if our observational skills are great, we should work on finding a voice. Once you have a voice, I think your style flows eventually.
What I love about that reflection is it's open, like creativity is open, like to everyone. And that's mm-hmm. like part of the purpose of the podcast. It's part of the whole ethos of Greater Than 1%. This notion that we can all have access, and it may need some work, it may need some focus and then some attention, but mm-hmm. it's available to everyone to tap into.
Absolutely. Because I think we can be creative if we decide to be creative, right? Yeah. Like a lot of people just say, hey, you are creative, but I'm not. But you're deciding not to be creative. If you do decide, I think there is just nothing that you can't do. And as kids, I'm sure everyone used to draw. And I don't know what was that point that people stopped drawing. I think if we just let our inner child out and explore more, I think people can let themselves be creative as well.
Which is a perfect skip into the next question. What advice would you give to someone aspiring to be an illustrator or wanting to change career? Because I think that's really poignant for you specifically, seeing you were kind of, I say this in the nicest way, you know, funneled towards engineering, and then you made a very yeah. conscious decision to yeah. go a very different route.
In my journey, I think I just knew that I was not happy. I just didn't want to sit down and do something because everyone else is doing it. Our society kind of tells us to do what is right, to earn a living doing what everyone is doing because that's what you're supposed to do. But I think just knowing what you want to do gives you a lot of strength and determination in taking the next step. The biggest challenge, I think, was one of that, to understand what I needed at the point. If someone is aspiring to be an illustrator or wants a career change, I would say that stick to what you are doing on the side so it pays your bills at least. But you take up a lot of time to explore drawing if you want to become an illustrator. Mm-hmm. Take a lot of time to draw. Use your free time, use your commute time. Now that we are home, I think we get that extra time that we used to use for our commute. Mm. You could use up that time. I honestly feel that if we put in the time and effort, there's nothing which is not possible.
It's great advice. And it is effort. Like, I think people, again, going back to that notion that people are like, oh, illustrators, you just draw all day, or, you know, you work in the arts and you do, you know, creative stuff all day. Yeah. But actually, yeah. there's a lot of blood, sweat and tears, and there's a lot of vulnerability that you have to work through.
There is. And I also feel like when you're in design school or uni, you kind of get that time to explore and like do whatever. I think that's the best time to just like figure out anything and like do everything and still be bad at it. I mean, nobody's going to hold you accountable.
Yeah, I agree. I teach on a creative producing course, and I keep trying to push my students, take risks. I want to see, I'd rather you fail and take huge risks now than go out into the industry and then not be really sure about what's going to work and what's not, or what you could do. Like, take the risk. University is like the playground to just do the most ridiculous out there ideas, or even small ideas.
100%. I agree with you. Also, educators play a huge role. I feel like I had one of these teachers who made me redo an assignment 3 times. And by the 3rd time, I think my work was the best that he had seen. I think it's great when teachers push you, because like, this is what art directors do later. They push you. I hated him then. I was like, what are you making me do? I already did it 2 times and it looks great. Why are you making me do this again?
I think as well, there's that thing about in education, there's those teachers that can spot the potential.
I think they know when should they push further. Yeah.
So apart from having to redo your assignment 3 times over, what has been one of the biggest challenges you faced in your career?
I would not call this a challenge, but I think when people want to be creatives, they also put a lot of pressure on finding their niche. And whereas me, and I was like, am I an illustrator? Am I a graphic designer? What am I doing? Should I only illustrate? Should I only do graphic design? But I guess it's all right. You can call yourself whatever the hell you want to. Nobody is going to say anything, because all they're going to look at is your work. And if your work is good, it does not matter what you call yourself. Yeah, I didn't realize this again, I gave my permission to myself to do so.
And it is hard, isn't it? Because I think we, as a society, like to create boxes and put people in certain pigeonholes and make everyone have a role and a title. So we all understand what mm-hmm. everyone's doing. But mm-hmm. as a creative, as you mentioned before, you know, we've got so many strands that we manage and juggle and tap into. You know, you're an illustrator and you're a graphic designer. You're also an engineer. You know, you also love strategy. There's so much of creativity that's fluid. Having to label yourself sometimes is a challenge.
I think it's a lot in the mindset as well. It's a lot of what you believe, which kind of translates into what you do. And I also think that it's a lot of working on a personal self as a journey to figure out what you want to do and to get better at your work as well. You can't just stop. I don't think there is a point where one can say, hey, today I'm great and I'm going to stop working on myself, because that doesn't happen. It doesn't work that way.
I kind of wish it did.
Well, when I was younger, I think I always thought, oh my God, one day I'm going to be this good. I don't know what that good was, but one day I'm going to be this good. And then that's about it. That was where it ended. But I don't think that day would ever come.
Yeah, no.
Yeah, because we all want to strive for something better.
Absolutely. And there's always something to learn. That's what, I mean, that's for me, one of the pleasures of life is like it's so full of new things and ideas and things to think about or learn about, or techniques or styles. Yeah,
absolutely. And which is why I love meeting new people. But being an illustrator, I think we always like are in our studios or home spaces creating or just working by ourselves. And I think events where I get to meet other people are lovely. Like, it's nice to put a face to people's online personas. We make friends online and then we end up meeting them in person. And that is amazing. But I love doing that. And which is why I also like doing workshops, because I get to interact with people and that's not in my day-to-day schedule, interacting. Which is how we met as well.
It is, yeah. Just before lockdown, the last great
alumni. Just before.
Yeah, just like days before.
Yeah. I'm so thankful I did that though. Yay, I went to a few things before the lockdown began.
So can you tell me what you love about what you do? Because you've been very intentional in every step you've taken leading up until now. So what is it you love about?
I wonder if I can put a pin on it, because there's just so much that I love about doing what I do right now. I love the fact that I don't have to look for something anymore. You know, I know I've been in that mental space where I didn't know what I wanted to do, and it was suffocating to be in that mental space. So I love the fact that I really know what I'm working towards. I like the work that I do. Another thing is I get to draw for work. Yay. Yeah, and setting my own routines, figuring out times of productivity which work for me. I think that is something, being a freelancer, we can have the flexibility of doing.
Okay. So we're in this period of uncertainty and stasis somewhat. So how are you planning to use this time at home?
Like I said before, my routine's pretty much set. Like, apart from, I don't want to push myself to do more than what I already do, because I feel like my life is quite wholesome right now. I already take out the time to do stuff other than my work. And also because it is a period of crisis, you know, if you think about it, maybe some people have the time and liberty and the money to sort of push themselves to use the time in the house. But I feel like I already have enough on my plate. And it's okay to not do anything else other than your work.
Yeah, that is very good advice. I'm taking so much of this conversation. I'm really glad I'm not doing that. All right. Well, look, I've so loved catching up. I think and you kind of touched upon it about like meeting up with people and, you know, putting faces to the name. I think that's one of the kind of difficulties I'm struggling with, because I always insist on doing the podcast in person and not virtually, because I think it's so important for that connection, that conversation. But obviously, like you said, we're in a crisis and that isn't possible.
We do what we have to do.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Yeah. We've still got to connect, and this is the options to us.
Yeah.
So coming to the end of this interview, and something I ask everyone before we sign off is two things. Is there a career or job in the creative industries you've always been curious about and thought, what does that person do or how does that role work? And then potentially I can find someone who does that job and get them on and we can talk about it and deconstruct it. And also, is there a woman in the creative industries that you would love to hear on Greater Than 1%?
Wow. I wonder if there's only one person.
You can have more than one. You can have more. Yeah. You're not the first. Yeah, you're not the first to flag that.
Great. I'm going to name a lot of people.
Great.
But a career or job, I'll tell you what. I took a trip to Bali. I took a silver making course, silver jewelry making. And I loved it so much. Like, I made the best piece of silver jewelry that I own. And every time I walk out with it, people ask me, oh my God, where'd you get it from? And it's such a comforting way to say that I made it, you know, and I'd love to know more about jewelry making, the craft behind it.
Definitely. I'm going to recommend to you an amazing woman we had on in series one. Her name is Lucy Gledhill, and she is an amazing, amazing silversmith and jeweler. And she creates art pieces and jewelry. I just think you would absolutely love her. She's episode 31 in series one. And
I'm taking notes.
Yeah. I will also investigate some other jewelry makers because she has a particular style. And obviously, as in the creative industries, we all work in different ways. So that's a great suggestion for getting someone else who works in jewelry. But definitely check out Lucy because I think you'll really, really love her work.
Awesome. I'm going to do that immediately. And someone that I'd like to suggest, there is this fashion designer back in India. Her name's Karishma Shani, and she owns a brand called Kasha. I love how she adds textures, patterns, and colors. Her play with all of this together is just so different. It's just so different that I see from day-to-day basis with what people do with fashion. So I think I love her work. Her name's Karishma Shani. Great. Within the creative industry, I would like to name someone else because we spoke about jeweler. Mm-hmm. There is, I don't know her name, but I know the name of a brand. It's called Benu Made, B-E-N-U-M-A-D-E. Mm-hmm. I love her jewelry. I'm so sad that I don't know her name, but I love her jewelry. I'd love to hear her as well.
Okay. That's great, then. I will reach out. Sneha, I've so loved talking to you. You have given me so many things to think about personally, which is like one of the major benefits for me of these podcasts is I get to reflect on other people's practices and processes. So I am definitely going to take on board some of the things that you talked about. And it's been so lovely chatting with you. And I'm so excited because we're going to reconnect in a week's time to look at the colouring in that people are going to
see. I'm so excited. I'm really excited about it.
Cool.
And I love talking as well.
Thank you so much.
Thanks, Rimi. Nice speaking to you. Bye.
Thank you for listening. If you enjoyed, please write a review and rate, as that helps other people find Greater Than 11%. Also, stay subscribed to keep up to date on the weekly releases.